Everyone, my name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This podcast is sponsored by Every Dot Black Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network. Our foundation scripture today comes from 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter and the 5th verse, and it reads, "Now he who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who also has given us the Spirit as a guarantee." The Storytelling Time podcast this week covers chapter 2 in the book, Heaven Can't Wait, or Can It? The sequel. The title of the podcast today is Prelude to Disaster. Before a story is recited in each of these podcasts, information is given about methods to use in becoming an author. Take a listen to the following previously recorded interview that I had with local businessman Thomas Wilson, as he explains how to be successful in becoming an author, as well as starting any business. After the interview, we'll return with our story for this week. And we're going to start with a special session today, and I'd like to introduce Mr. Thomas Wilson to the show. And I want you to know that he is an entrepreneur extraordinaire, I might add. So welcome, Thomas, to the show. And Thomas has been with us before, and I thought that he could provide a special motivation for all of you out there who wish to start a new business, and that business is becoming an author. So welcome, Thomas, for being with us today.
It's always a pleasure to come and speak to you, and you give me access to your audience where I can add some value, and hopefully I can add some more value today.
Okay. And we're going to get right into it. So first, I want you to introduce yourself in addition to your name, as you just gave, or I just introduced you. What do you do professionally? And most importantly, I'd like for you to introduce to our listening audience some basic principles that will assure them that they will be successful in becoming an author or a success in any business for that matter. So the floor is yours.
Well, I've been in business for myself for 20 years now, since I left college, North Carolina A&T, degree in psychology. I first stepped into the entertainment business, which I've owned one of the biggest entertainment companies for the last 15 to 19 years on the East Coast, Iceberg Entertainment. I also do coaching, business coaching with Mogul Visions, which I try to help entrepreneurs, small business owners really expand and show them how they can get to the next level. Also, I'm also an employee of Edward Jones, which is one of the biggest financial firms in the nation. So I really put myself out there as far as just growth. And if you want to be in business, the key is to grow. Never think you're the biggest. Never think that you can't learn anymore. You need mentors. You need structure. You need to really understand your idea and your craft and really focus on who's your audience and why are you in business and have a goal. A lot of us get in business and we just want to say we have a business, but we don't have a goal. And I think that's where you get off track. You have to have some type of structure and you have to have a destination of what you're trying to do, who you're trying to serve. And these are very key critical pieces that it's going to take to be successful in business.
Okay, well, as far as business is concerned, it's a challenge to a lot of people. We're so used to corporate America. And for a lot of people, getting into business is scary. And although the sky's the limit, you don't have the ceiling that you have, for example, in corporate America or, for that matter, in public education, my previous career. And especially being an author, people tell me a lot of times when I indicate that I am an author, professional writer, they don't ask me, they're just tell me the fact that it's hard. They don't see how I could write or anybody could write on a consistent basis because they perceive it as being hard. And, of course, in the next few weeks, we'll be training many people out there across America the principles of becoming a successful author. And of course, these same principles apply to any business. So what kind of special things could you tell, say, for example, a beginning author out there, or anyone beginning in business, that would assure that they will succeed?
The most critical piece of this is the why. See, very few organizations or people know why they do what they do. Why is not about making money. That's a result. Why is a purpose, cause, or belief. It's the very reason your business exists. It's the very reason why you got into the business. It's a critical piece that's going to keep you going no matter how hard times get. And they're going to get hard. They're going to get tough because the market is educating you. A lot of times we get in business and we think we're educating the market. But the market was already there. The people already had need for the service or the product that you're trying to create. You're just trying to create a better product or deliver better service. And they're going to teach you about the service they want because somebody else has created that void. And I think the biggest problem we have as entrepreneurs or small business owners, we see something that we may be capable of doing, but we haven't truly identified our audience. Like, for instance, you say you're writing a book. Well, first you have to figure out, who are you writing this book for? Who's going to read this? What age group? What demographics? You know, then you have to understand the market. How do I market? How do I get my product to the audience? How do I deliver this? So now we're talking about distribution. We're talking about marketing. We're talking about layout. These are things you have to sit down and do the hardest thing nobody wants to do. Put together a plan. You must put together a plan from beginning to end. That way you at least have some type of structure, organization that's going to keep you disciplined to get to your goal, to reach your destination. So many times we just jump out there and we open a business without understanding the layout. Do you have an LLC? Do you have a C corp? Is it a sole proprietorship? You really got to consider, how big do you want to be? So many of us, we don't take the time for the details that's needed at the beginning. And we just say we have a business and we tap ourselves on the back. But is it a successful business? Are you profitable? You don't have a business without a customer.
I think that's what a lot of people are afraid of, the details and the amount of work that they're going to have to put into a business. And certainly in writing a book, for example, I think they realize that it's very difficult. When I tell people, it's not really so much difficult, but it's simply a matter of taking the time and the effort, putting those two things into effect to produce something that you want. And if you do that, you will come up with a plan. I think that's what you're saying.
Okay, so I'm going to hit on a couple things, and I'm going to mention these, but then I'm going to dive back into where I started out with the what, how, and the why. But let me first say, you need to have a good idea. You need to understand, is there market demand for the product or the service you want to create? Then, of course, we mentioned putting together a business plan. Then putting together a marketing plan. Then find a mentor, somebody that's been there before, somebody that can guide you through their process. Also, the ability to track and adjust. What are your metrics? How do you measure success? What is your benchmark? Then the execution of the plan. What if you put in place to say, okay, I'm reaching this goal. This is how I'm executing. This is the procedure. This is the process that each and every time is duplicatable. Then do you have the capital to start? We know that that's really a key. Analysis paralysis. Some of us, we just think too much. You can have the best idea in the world, but you have to take action. Or you're just a good thinker. That's not going to get the job done. Now, I ended with the capital part. Do not allow not having the capital personally to derail you from following that dream or opening that business. Because there's so many people in the world that have capital. They're throwing capital into the world trying to find the next great idea, the next great Amazon, the next great Facebook. They're looking for you. But what you have to do is discipline yourself enough to sit down, put together that plan so they can clearly see what's in your head. You can try to explain to me all day how you're going to be successful, but until you put it on paper and you have clearly defined your objectives, you're unclear. You're unclear what you're trying to do. You're unclear on what you're trying to create. And that's where the analysis paralysis starts. And now you allow other people to dictate whether or not you move forward, because you're going to ask everybody in the world what they think about this, how you do this, but you're never going to take action because it's that fear factor. We're scared of being great. We're scared of jumping off that ledge and taking a chance on ourselves and betting on ourselves. We always want to let somebody else give us an exit strategy. So when somebody said, well, it probably won't work, we use that as our scapegoat.
Well, I really love the word action that you use, because the bottom line is that we have to take action. And I tell people who are even remotely interested in becoming an author or writing professionally, as daunting as it might seem, at some point you have to sit down with your pen or on a keyboard and start to write. And my experience is that when you do that, things just come to you. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. While Maggie and Fred continue to get accustomed to their new lifestyle as husband and wife in Chicago, Maggie's parents were having their own challenges back in Flint. Matthew, are you asleep? Missy asked her husband as she lay in bed beside him, listening to the crackling sound of the fireplace on the other side of the room. On this cold, snowy night in Flint, she found it comforting to snuggle against him with covers over them both. Matthew didn't awake. He just kept sleeping, to Mincy's dismay. The day before was filled with activity for Mincy that included Christmas shopping at the local mall. With the Thanksgiving holiday past, it was time to dig all their decorations from out of the closet. Matthew was tired from spending most of the day gathering firewood to feed the large fireplace that was situated between two big windows in their bedroom. The two of them gazed out the window as the snow drifted past, set in motion by a howling wind. Thank goodness for the electric furnace, because that fireplace can only do so much in providing the heat that we need, Missy said to herself. But the fireplace did reduce their monthly utility bill. To make up for whatever heat that was not provided, they usually just nestle close together under the covers. Missy would soon forget about the prospect of waking Matthew and just be content with going to sleep herself. Everything was quiet and dark in the room except for an occasional wind gust that attempted to make its way into the second floor room where they resided for the night. Gusts of wind whistled loudly on several occasions. The wind was relentless as it swirled over, under, and around the house, seeking any crack and cranny that might be available where it could intrude. Thank goodness Matthew had just placed plastic covering over the windows as insulation, because they had problems with ventilation in the past. He did the job by using a tall ladder that reached to the second floor high above the ground. Despite the need for plastic over the windows to keep the wind from seeping inside, the house was well built and was only 10 years old. It was a structurally sound dwelling. As the Christmas season neared, Matthew would need to use that ladder to place the icicle lighting fixtures that Missy had taken from the shed. She had placed in the enclosure for him to get them later that afternoon. Missy wanted Matthew to put that lighting up all around their home, especially on the second floor just below the roof, where their bedroom was situated. She thought these lights, more than anything else, would make her house more lavishly decorated than any other in the neighborhood. Missy did not consider how dangerous it would be for her husband to climb the ladder so high above the ground. He would have to keep his balance for sure, while placing the lighting fixtures just below the roof, as she had wanted. Putting them there would make it look authentic and therefore propel her house beyond the others in the neighborhood in decorum, she thought. The sound of the wind helped Maggie to go to sleep after her unsuccessful efforts to wake up her husband. The wind gusts were interrupted only by an occasional burst of thunder, unusual for this time of year, that could be heard faintly in the distance. With the otherwise quietness that prevailed in the room, it added to the ambiance that helped Missy relax and just think about the various events that would take place during the holiday season. All this plus traditional songs of the season being played on a radio station would help them both go to sleep. It was a cold night. They just anticipated the holy night of Christmas Eve, which was only a short time away. Maggie was in between being asleep and conscious, being totally aware of the howling wind outside and the sounds of the season being played on that local radio station. Thank you. While Matthew slept beside her, Missy played a simple game, trying to stay awake just to meditate. Her thoughts centered on John Jr., who was denied the opportunity to spend a long life with her daughter, Maggie, when he died from the car accident they had. Missy glanced at the digital clock beside the bed and saw that it was just after midnight. Before she knew it, she was waking up the next morning, and that clock read 8 o'clock a.m. She awakened to a bright rising sun in the eastern sky after having a sound sleep. It was pleasant after the snowstorm the previous evening. She could even hear birds chirping to further contribute to the freshness of a new day. It was only after the snowstorm with those weird rumblings of thunder when she remembered John just before going to sleep. It seemed like only moments ago, but Missy had not realized that over 8 hours had passed since she consciously had those thoughts. Yes, she had drifted off to sleep while thinking about her late son-in-law. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. It had been a stormy night, but now, fully awake, Missy saw it as an opportunity to tell Matthew how much she cared for him, with the purpose of persuading him to put decorations all around the house, including the very top near the roof where icicle lighting would look natural. She thought to herself that she would be the envy of the neighborhood, with the most beautiful Christmas presentation and lights galore. And as usual, Matthew would oblige in putting those lights up for her. He usually did anything she asked of him. Matthew, it's morning now and it's time to get up, Missy said, patting her husband, who was still snuggled beneath the covers, but was now well awake. Finally, Matthew sat on the side of the bed and yawned widely while rubbing his eyes and shielding them from that bright rising sunlight that streamed through the bedroom window. "Okay, Missy, I'm up now. So what do you want?" he asked his wife. "Oh, I'll tell you later. Want some coffee?" she asked. "Yeah, you know how I like it," was Matthew's response. Missy replied, "I'll tell you what then," she said confidently. "In addition to that, I'll give you a hot breakfast." "Now, how about that?" Missy continued to ask. She anticipated that he wouldn't reject that offer. "Okay, honey, I'll be waiting downstairs and I'll be watching some of the news on TV until it's ready," Matthew said. "Okay," Missy responded, then added, "I'll do just that. You just get yourself washed up and put on your clothes. I'll come in the living room and get you when it's ready. Oh, by the way, it'll be about 30 minutes before I come to get you," she added. Matthew agreed with everything she said, and soon they went downstairs. Missy had cooked a nice meal of bacon, eggs, and home fries to go along with his coffee. Matthew had come from the living room watching TV and was now sitting at the kitchen table, so she didn't have to come and get him after all. During the middle of the meal, Missy saw the opportunity to tell him how she wanted the decorations to be placed around the house. "Matthew, I want you to put the decorations up like you did last year. And please, don't forget to hang the icicle lighting, but be careful up there. It's such a narrow ladder." She tried to encourage him to do the job as she wanted him to do, but Matthew wasn't as excited about putting the icicle lighting up, not only because of its danger, but also because of the extra effort involved in this chore, which included having to use his truck. Missy knew that Matthew had to go to town after breakfast, and as usual, he grabbed a white straw hat that he always wore when going to the store to get items he needed for his work in the yard. For a long time, she called him Straw Man because of it, at least until he got tired of her calling him that and asked her to stop. "Missy, you're just making fun of me whenever I hear that coming from you. Call me something else, will you?" he asked her on several occasions. Before Matthew left for town on one occasion, Missy told him, "I think you look cute in that hat, Matthew. It's really becoming on you," she said, trying to convince him to continue to wear it. Over the weeks and months that preceded Christmas, Missy gradually abided by what Matthew asked her to do and didn't call him by that name as much. Nonetheless, she couldn't keep that image of her husband wearing that straw hat out of her mind. At any rate, in preparation for the upcoming Christmas holiday, one day Matthew went to town and did his errands as usual. While he was away, Maggie gathered all the Christmas decorations she had stored away out in the shed. She hadn't used any of them since last Christmas. The shed was situated only a few feet from the back door of their house. It was cold that morning, but the day was clear and with the sun beaming down, providing enough heat to take some of the chill out of the air. The weather after the storm was often mild with clear skies, and boy, did it storm the night before. The snow flurries that occurred the previous day manifested itself in the several inches of the white stuff that covered the ground. Missy went the short distance from the back door, which was really a door to a large screen-covered enclosure that they had attached to the back of their house when they first moved there, and got the decorations from the shed. She would soon leave the shed, walk through the ankle-deep snow, and place boxed decorations in the enclosure for Matthew to get later in the day. She only had to watch her steps in order to carry the items the short distance from the shed to the enclosure without slipping on the snow-covered surface. Soon, everything was there within the enclosure for Matthew to get. While Missy's job was done, Matthew was about to begin his annual Christmas chore of putting up most of the decorations outside the house later that day. He would soon return from town and was finally ready to tackle the job. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Before dealing with the task he had to do for Missy, Matthew went out to get some firewood that was stored next to the shed. After opening the enclosure door, Matthew could feel the chill through the clothing he was wearing. The wind had picked up its speed since earlier in the day. "Phew, it's really cold out here," he said to himself, as he gathered up the last pieces of logs that they would use in the fireplace for the next several days. He navigated through the foot of snow that had accumulated on the ground. The boots he wore protected his feet as he slowly walked from the side of the shed where the logs were kept. After taking as many logs as he could, Matthew carried them the few feet to the door of the enclosure. Once inside, he closed the door. After he was safely inside, away from the elements, he then placed the logs on the floor in a corner and quickly pulled off his boots. "Boy, these socks are so damp, and my feet are freezing." Yes, Matthew was cold all over from the exposure to the elements outside. Because of the frigid temperatures, he did not look forward to hanging those icicle lighting fixtures near the roof of their house that Missy had for him to do. Matthew said to himself, "I need to dry myself off and prepare to hang those things. he tried to build up as much confidence as he could to do the job. At least Missy had gotten the lighting fixtures from the shed earlier and had placed them conveniently in the enclosure, not far from where he had laid the logs. He only needed to get his truck and mentally prepare for about 2 hours of doing what he knew Missy would greatly appreciate. By midday, both Matthew and Missy looked forward to Fred and Maggie coming over to be with them for the afternoon. Maggie had made Missy aware of her plans earlier in the week. The plan was that Fred would help with putting up the decorations within and around the house, and especially those icicle lighting fixtures. Fred would assist Matthew in placing them high above the house, on the second floor, just beneath the roof. We'll be right back to finish the show. Welcome back. Return with us next time when we will learn how Matthew fared putting up those Christmas lighting fixtures for Missy. Well, that's all for today. Be sure to enjoy your desires, whether you currently have them or they have not yet been met. But always remember, whatever you may be going through, whether good or bad, there's always more good things coming your way. We'll see you the next time.